study. And hopefully we'll get back to the teacher sessions we were doing there when everybody gets back. Psalm 87 is where we have got to. Start with a summary for this psalm. Psalm 87 looks forward to the restoration of Zion as the dwelling of Yahweh and the life center of the nations. So I'll go over that one more time. Psalm 87 looks forward to the restoration of Zion as the dwelling of Yahweh and the life center of the nations. A simple outline for the psalm in two parts, verses 1 to 3, the glories of Zion. Verses 4 to 7, the born-again nations. Go over that one more time. Verses 1 to 3, the glories of Zion. Verses 4 to 7, the born-again nations. All right, we'll go to our observations for Psalm 87. Psalm 87 is a psalm for the sons of Korah. We can see that in the superscription there, a psalm or song for the sons of Korah. It is notated as a song for musical accompaniment. It does have two selahs in the text at the end of verse number 3 and at the end of verse number 6. There's no further musical direction given. There's no occasion that is given for the psalm. And when we read it, especially when we read it in context with these book 3 psalms, it certainly fits with that exile or post-exile setting of the book 3 psalms. And so the exact time that it was written and such, we really just don't have any idea, and some want to place it here and some want to place it there. But the substance of the psalm places it very well where it's at. Psalm 87 is what is categorized as a Zion psalm, and that would also make it prophetic predictive, as it is looking forward to future fulfillment. Psalm 87 is the third of the Korahite psalms in book number 3. We have those two pairs of the psalms for the sons of Korah, 84 and 85. 86 is the one psalm of David that's in book 3, and then 87 and 88. Now, this does have connections with the other book 3 psalms. As we said, it fits in very well with the way that these psalms progress as you read them together. And it also is obviously going to be connected to other Zion psalms that are in book 3, which like Psalm 76 and Psalm 84. It shares other connections with Psalm 74, 79, and 83. So one of the things that we have noted in this book 3 psalms we've been going through is obviously these are a lot of psalms of lament of the devastation of Jerusalem, and so there's a lot of focus on the enemy nations. So Psalm 74, 79, and 83 speak of the enemy nations and speak of, in fact, their destruction or their judgment by God. Well, this psalm speaks also of the nations, but rather speaks of their salvation than of their judgment. So it's sort of the other side of the coin, I guess, from what these other psalms have been talking about. It also fits in book 3, and if you notice when you sort of step back and you look at how these psalms have worked together, beginning there in Psalm 73 and coming forward, you realize that there's almost an alternating pattern. It's not exact, but it's very close to an alternating pattern of lament and hope. And book three actually works out to being about half lament and about half hope. And so this would be a hope psalm as opposed to a lament psalm. So it does fit in within that as well. The poetic features of Psalm 87, there's a number of commentators and such that say it has the least poetic structure of all the psalms. And it's fairly straightforward in the terms that are used. There's not really a lot of strong imagery or anything like that. There is some repetition. You get the word born in verses 4, 5, and 6 that is repeated. I would describe this psalm as being something of a staccato style. And so in music, when you play a note and you just give a short and you don't let the note ring, you know, you just give it a short hit like on a piano or whatever, that would be a staccato style. That's kind of the way that this psalm is. It's just sort of short statements and it's over. So that's how I would describe the style of this psalm. Okay, so seven verses. We want to work our way through these, so I'll go ahead and read this psalm. His foundation is in the holy mountains. The Lord loveth the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things are spoken of thee, O city of God, Selah. I will make mention of Rahab and Babylon to them that know me. Behold, Philistia and Tyre with Ethiopia, this man was born there. And of Zion it shall be said, this and that man was born in her, and the highest himself shall establish her. The Lord shall count when he writeth up the people that this man was born there, Selah. As well the singers as the players on instruments shall be there. All my springs are in thee. All right, so if you kind of paid attention to that psalm, you realize kind of the staccato style of it. In fact, it's almost like at times it's not even really making full statements. It's just sort of brief statements that's moving through. So verses 1 to 3, which open up this psalm, and open up this psalm describing or reflecting on the beauty or the glory of Zion. And so the foundation that's referred to in verse 1, this refers to the founding of a city. And so here it would be the founding of Zion and the reference to the hills of Jerusalem. Not only hills or mountains that are mentioned, but holy mountains. And so this is the place where Yahweh will set his anointed son king, all the way back from Psalm 2 and verse number 6, his holy hill of Zion. Set in the holy mountains also makes a contrasting picture or image with Mount Sinai, with that in Mount Zion. Now the word for love that is used here, the Lord loveth the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. And that word for love that is used is a word that it does have the idea of affection with it. It also includes the idea of choice. So it's a reference to God choosing Zion in the sense of like he set his love upon Zion, upon this place. This is the place that God has chosen to set his name. So we saw this in Psalm 78, verses 68 and 69. And this is the place where David was directed to buy the land for the construction of the temple. That's 2 Samuel chapter 24, verses 18 to 25. Later, Solomon was instructed to build the temple here at this location, 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verses 1 to 2. So God chose Jerusalem as the place above all other places within the inheritance of Jacob. Now, the inheritance of Jacob obviously is the land that was promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so this would be the 12 tribes of Israel, the land promised to Abraham. And within all of that inheritance, the Lord chose this place of Zion. He chose Jerusalem, as we saw in Psalm 68 and verse number 16. Now, verse 3 speaks of the glorious things that are spoken of this city of God, referring to glorious promises that have been made concerning Zion, referring to glorious prophecies that have been made concerning the future of Zion. So Psalm 74 and Psalm 79 that have come before here in book number 3, These are psalms that lament the destruction of the temple, for instance, in Psalm 74, and the destruction of Jerusalem in Psalm 79. So in other words, as you're reading book 3, there's a focus on devastation, and Jerusalem has been destroyed, the temple has been destroyed, and so there's this desolation of Jerusalem that's being lamented in this book number 3. And really this goes along with other prophecies pertaining to Israel's judgment. In other words, that Zion would not look glorious. So Isaiah, in a few different places, Isaiah chapter 49 and verse 14 describes Zion like a forsaken place. In chapter 54, verses 6 to 8, Isaiah describes Zion and this is Zion under the judgment, the exile of Israel, the scattering of Israel. He describes Zion as a barren and destitute woman forsaken by her husband. Now, obviously, Isaiah was prophesying quite a while, more than a century before this would happen. But he's described, that's how he's described it. He described in chapter 51 and verse 3 of Isaiah, described Zion as being a waste and a wilderness and a desert. And so Zion in the desolation is not glorious. And so when we read this in verse number 3, we realize that this is a reflection on all of those beautiful promises and all those glories that have been promised and prophesied concerning Zion in the future that are not reflected at the time of the psalm. Zion is also here referred to as the city of God, which is another designation in a couple of other Zion psalms, Psalm 46 and verse number 4, Psalm 48 verses 1 and 8. Then we look at verses 4 to 6, and verses 4 to 6 focus on the nations in Zion, the Gentile nations in Zion. Now, the Gentile nations are viewed as enemy nations, and they're specifically enemy nations because they do not know God, and that's Psalm 79 and verse number 6. But here we see, starting in verse number 4, that there's some that will know him. And five nations, in fact, are mentioned. We have, first of all, Rahab. Rahab is a reference to Egypt. You see that in Isaiah chapter 30, verse 7, Isaiah chapter 51, and verse number 9. Why it's a reference to Egypt is a little uncertain, but it does seem that there's some connection. The term that is used for Rahab, as it's translated here, the term that was used was the name of a mythical sea monster, and possibly associated with Egypt as some sort of a god or something like that. So it's not real certain how that name is associated with Egypt, but so it is a reference to Egypt. And just also as a as a point of interest, Rahab here is spelled differently than the harlot Rahab in the book of Joshua and Israel's history. And so those are not the same words, even though they come out the same in our translations. But this here is a reference to Egypt, and it occurs, I think, only three times in the Old Testament, once in Isaiah here, and then in Psalm 89, perhaps. I don't remember right off the top of my head, but there's one other psalm where it occurs. Then we have reference to Babylon, which is interesting because Babylon was obviously the nation that destroyed the temple and destroyed the city. And we had those laments earlier in the Psalms. And here we have reference to Babylon, and there being some of Babylon that know the Lord. We also have reference to Philistia. Philistia refers to the Philistines. Ultimately, it is where the name Palestine came from, as that was the Roman designation for the land of Israel, Palestine. And obviously, Palestinians today continue to be bitter enemies of Israel, and this would be that descendancy. We have a reference to Tyre, which would be the Phoenicians. We have a reference to Ethiopia, which it probably refers more to a region modern day of southern Egypt and Sudan and part of northern Ethiopia that is referred to here. Now, so these nations are mentioned, and these are nations that you can find in the histories of Israel, and you can find in the prophets. These are nations that were enemy nations to Israel, some having great power at certain times and being more fierce enemies than at others. But what is so remarkable here is that it, in the future time, it will be said that people of these nations were born in Zion. And that's what gets repeated. It starts here in verse 4, then verse 5, and then verse 6. It gets repeated. There's a repetition of being born in Zion. And in verse 6, we see Yahweh will enroll the peoples of the nations. And you have that, the people, that word for people. And it is plural in the Hebrew. It is peoples. It does refer to nations. He will count. He will write up the nations that this man was born there, talking about Zion. So being born in Zion refers to citizenship. And it is incredible, again, remarkable that it is being spoken here of Gentile nations in that time. Verse 7 then gives us the closing meditation, and pretty much on all accounts, the Hebrew of this verse was spoken of as difficult, and it's a little uncertain, and you can see in parentheses there, shall be there, sort of being supplied. Players on instruments is actually taken from a word that could mean musicians like that are playing instruments, could also be referring to dancers. It's a little bit unclear of what exactly is indicated, but it could be singers and instruments. But nevertheless, what we get in verse number 7 is the nations, these nations that have been mentioned, these nations praising and worshiping Yahweh in Zion. And springs, the reference to the springs that are there in Zion, springs obviously would refer to a life source or to a life center. So that would be a little bit of imagery. If you go back to a Zion psalm in Psalm 46 in verse number 4, you have this reference to this river in Zion, and some would connect that with the river seen in places like Revelation 22 and so on. All right, so let's go to interpretation. So Psalm 87 teaches, aside from the forward-looking restoration of Zion, teaches that new birth, or being born again, as the conversion of enemy nations. So these five nations are named, and then it is said of them that there are those that know Yahweh and those that are born in Zion. So the implication then is that of being born again. So if they're Egyptians, they're born Egyptians. But yet in this restored Zion, they are born in Zion. Well, Jesus used that phrase, born again, in John 3, in verses 3 and 7. And he used that phrase saying that it was necessary to be born again in order to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now, John uses that word again down in John chapter 3 and verse 31, where it clearly means from heaven or from above. Now this is the regeneration that is promised in the new covenant as the new heart or the circumcision of the heart. And here it is referred to as being born in or of Zion. Now, the messianic hope of Psalm 87 is seen through continuing to pursue what it means to be born in or of Zion in this psalm. So Israel, in suffering this scattering judgment that is prophesied, leaves Zion as a barren and a destitute woman. And we talked about some of those references from Isaiah, this common imagery in Isaiah. But in the day of Zion's restoration, when the salvation comes out of Zion, the barren and destitute Zion will bring forth many children. All right, so Isaiah chapter 49, we'll begin here at verse 13 and go to verse 23. Sing, O heavens, and be joyful, O earth, and break forth into singing, O mountains, for the Lord hath comforted his people and will have mercy upon his afflicted. But Zion said, the Lord hath forsaken me, and my Lord hath forgotten me. Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee. Behold, I have graven thee upon the palms of my hands. Thy walls are continually before me. Thy children shall make haste. Thy destroyers and they that made thee waste shall go forth of thee. Lift up thine eyes round about, and behold, all these gather themselves together and come to thee. As I live, saith the Lord, thou shalt surely clothe thee with them all as with an ornament, and bind them on thee as a bride doeth. For thy waste and thy desolate places and the land of thy destruction shall even be too narrow by reason of the inhabitants, and they that swallowed thee up shall be far away. The children which thou shalt have after thou have lost the other shall say again in thine ears, the place is too strait for me, give me place that I may dwell. Then shalt thou say in thine heart, who hath begotten me these, seeing I have lost my children, and am desolate, a captive, and removing to and fro? And who hath brought up these? Behold, I was left alone. These, where had they been? Thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will lift up mine hand to the Gentiles, and set up my standard to the people, and they shall bring thy sons in their arms, and thy daughters shall be carried upon their shoulders, and kings shall be thy nursing fathers, and their queens thy nursing mothers. They shall bow down to thee with their face toward the earth, and lick up the dust of thy feet, and thou shalt know that I am the Lord, for they shall not be ashamed that wait for me. So here's one passage where Isaiah has used this image of Zion becoming this barren and destitute woman that's forsaken of her husband, and she has no offspring, she has no family, and she's in this waste. And yet there's going to come a day, this future day, when she's going to be amazed at all these children. It's almost like, where did all these children come from? Where did all this come from? There's so much that the land cannot contain them. That's the way that Isaiah describes this time. So here's another picture from Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 54 this time, verses 1 to 17. Sing, O barren, that thou that didst not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail with child, for more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. For thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame. For thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. For thy Maker is thine husband. The Lord of hosts is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth shall he be called. For the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit, and a wife of youth, when thou wast refused, saith thy God. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord thy Redeemer. For this is as the new waters of Noah unto me. For as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee nor rebuke thee. For the mountains shall depart and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Lord that hath mercy on thee. O thou afflicted, tossed with tempest and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colors and lay thy foundations with sapphires. I will make thy windows of agates and thy gates of carbuncles and all thy borders of pleasant stones. And all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. In righteousness shalt thou be established. Thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear, and from terror, for it shall not come near thee. Behold, they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work, and I have created the waster to destroy. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord. Here again, we have this picture of Zion dwelling peacefully, safely, and securely. No enemies able to prosper. No weapon formed against Zion is able to have success against them. Now, So this image of Zion as this bereft widow and destitute widow that is childless, in many places, and what we've been reading here are references to this future gathering and restoration of Israel, when all Israel shall be saved, that Paul talked about in Romans chapter 11 and verse 26. But Isaiah also prophesies in that day of the salvation of Gentile nations. So we go to a place like Isaiah chapter 19, verses 18 to 25. In that day shall five cities in the land of Egypt speak the language of Canaan and swear to the Lord of hosts. One shall be called the city of destruction. In that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt, for they shall cry unto the Lord because of the oppressors, and he shall send them a Savior and a great one, and he shall deliver them. And the Lord shall be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, and shall do sacrifice and oblation. Yea, they shall vow a vow unto the Lord and perform it. And the Lord shall smite Egypt, he shall smite and heal it, and they shall return even to the Lord, and he shall be entreated of them, and they shall heal them. In that day shall there be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian shall come into Egypt, and the Egyptian into Assyria, and the Egyptian shall serve with the Assyrians. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, Blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, mine inheritance. So what are we looking at here? We're looking at in this restoration of Zion, that there will be a salvation of Gentile nations, that in that kingdom there will be Gentile nations that will be the people of God along with Israel. And in fact, we could say it, the peoples of God in that sense. Israel, my inheritance, Egypt, my people, Assyria, my people, they are born of or in Zion. So Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 to 4, And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. Many people shall go and say, Come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. So the point then is that whether Jews or Gentiles, they must be born again in order to enter the kingdom. It's exactly what Jesus was telling Nicodemus. It's what Paul was speaking of in Romans and Galatians and other places. So Jacob, or Israel, and the nations will worship in Zion when the anointed Son King reigns from Jerusalem in that day. And obviously this would be fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant, where God promised to bless all the nations of the earth through that nation that he would bring forth from Abraham, that nation of Israel. All right, let's go to application. I have two of these. Number one, understanding Psalm 87 helps us understand that the vilest enemies of God can be citizens of his kingdom by being born again. So reading this psalm as Gentiles really should humble us in his grace, just as when you read Romans 9 to 11, and Paul speaks of the grafting in of the Gentiles and the blessings that have come upon the Gentiles through the people of Israel, even through their setting aside. And he says, if their setting aside has been glorious, how much more glorious will their gathering again be? So in other words, yes, we are... Zion obviously is in the land promised to Abraham, where the Lord will reign, where he will establish his kingdom in that future time. Israel will be regathered and in their land. But we're told about how the nations of the earth are going to be streaming in and out of Jerusalem, how the blessings are going to cover the earth from King Jesus reigning upon the throne of his father David. So we read a psalm like this, and we do realize that we are very much included. We are very much involved in what is being spoken of here. This isn't just sort of the wishful thinking of Israelites, descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but even of us as well. Number two, understanding Psalm 87 gives us sort of that fuller picture if we put it together like with Psalm 2, for instance. So presently, the nations are raging, they are rebelling, but there will be peace and joy when the Messiah returns. When he returns and rules the nations with a rod of iron, as Psalm 2 says that he will do. When he returns to Zion, as we have read in so many instances, then we will see the nations, those born of Zion, and we will see the singers and the players on the instruments and the praise and the worship of God going forth of all nations on the earth. So, a psalm like this then, it gives us hope. It also gives us some stability in the midst of the chaos and the rebellion in which we live. And I don't know of a better way to describe the culture that we live in today than just chaos and rebellion. It seems that the culture around us is just bent on defying God, even in the use of personal pronouns. Just what, in any way, if there's any way that we can defy God, then that's what we're going to do. Just bent on that, just chaotic and rebellious. And it's very troubling. It is very troubling and very disconcerting and disorienting for us to look out. But a psalm like this, and I think it was, I don't remember if it's Andrew Bonner, might have been his commentary, or might have been Graham Scroggie. I don't remember which one, but one of them said something about, you know, whenever we are, overridden with anxiety about the world around us, you know, read this psalm seven times, you know, and just be filled with hope, because there truly is hope, even though things do look quite chaotic around us now.